I'm Ruthie, host of Out There, here on Valley Free Radio. Tune in for stories from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond, Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. And thanks for tuning in to Out There today. It's Friday, April 19th, 2024. I'm live in the studio. I wasn't live in the studio the last couple weeks. Well, actually, last week I was alive in the studio, but I wasn't actually talking into the mic. I played the interview with Molly Hale again. But this week, yes, I am here. I am alive. I am talking into the mic, going out over the air. And for today's show, well, I was in Kentucky the last couple weeks. So I have some clips from there. A lot of them are just my rants, I'm sorry to say. Am I sorry? I'm not sorry. Well, I'll start with, a letter that I wrote to a very good friend. I have to say, when I write letters to friends and then I share them on my show, I am not thinking, almost never, I'm rarely thinking, when I write them, I'm rarely thinking about sharing them. I'm just sharing my heart, and then I read the letter to edit it afterwards. I'm like, oh, well, I wrote this. Maybe I should share it with more people. All right, here it is. 30 March, 2024. Dear Now, thanks for meeting me at the Academy of Music. Well, I guess you would have been there anyway. Thanks for the reminder that all the current crises are not all my fault, and hope is a slow-burning thing. What does that even mean? Oh, just words that come into my head. The G73 Express pulled onto the interstate going past a few camper encampments in the meadows, surrounded by trash. Actually, first the bus went down Pleasant Street past Millennium Liquors, the Packy, as Dwayne would refer to liquor stores in his stories. Going past the meadows, I thought of all the years he lived in the meadows. That was before I knew him. Then I started missing him, the way he was a bridge for me into a completely different social group, lifestyle, experience, knowledge base, etc. I felt like when he died, my bridge collapsed, and there's no one in my life anymore that can help me bridge divides like he did. I want to spread his ashes in the spring now, like his uncle said, but I haven't gotten any response from his son, which is okay. I'm not holding my breath on that. I just need to take a walk myself through the Sawmill Hills to the mossy rock and pay my respects. Remember him. Remind myself what I learned from him, so I never forget those lessons. How hard he fought to stay alive. I didn't think anything would kill him. He was so tough. He kept living a pretty full life despite intense pain and isolation, and struggling to breathe, phlegm everywhere, couldn't speak or yell, wasting away, but he still lugged glass bottles at Cans for Cancer, rode his bike and went grocery shopping, cooked and provided for me. A few nights ago, I went out on a dumpster run, wearing his old Patriots coat, his big light raincoat, on the e-bike I got for him that he gave back. I was so warm and cozy and comfortable, so fluffy and comfortable in the cold drizzle. It was nice to imagine his warmth around me, holding me gently suspended in air, warm and alive. Thanks for the skull muffin and the Death Cafe flyer. When the G73 Express pulled into the Holyoke Mall, there were so many cars, highways, whipping past, and I missed the way Dwayne was disgusted by cars like me and loved biking and took buses, but also he knew a lot about cars. I was feeling sad, so when the bus pulled away from the Holyoke Mall, I thought I would play a mind game, an alphabet game, where you think of words having to do with, say, sadness. So you say, A is for alone. A is for alone. B is for bummed. A is for alone. B is for bummed. C is for crying. A is for alone. B is for bummed. C is for crying. D is for depressed. Despaired. A is for alone. B is for bummed. C is for crying. D is for despaired. E is for exasperated. A is for etc. And you see if you can make it to Z and remember every word you came up with. But I think I got to about H and just started laughing so hard about my silly, pathetic melodrama. It was so over the top. I just had to laugh. And then I started a new one. A is for allowed. A is for allowed, B is for B. A is for allowed, B is for B, C is for courteous. A is for allowed, B is for B, C is for courteous, D is for daring. And on and on. E is for exhilarated, F is for friendly, G is for grateful, hopeful, inspired, joyous, kind, laughing. And on into better mood land. I'm on the Chinatown bus, bound to New York now. Shoot, I forgot TP. I don't think they've ever had TP on this bus when I've ridden it. Ah, but I have two seats to myself. That's the difference between being functional tomorrow when I arrive and being a zombie. Well, I hope you are having a good day, a good dying day, living day, grieving day, loving and laughing day. Love, Ruthie.
It's Saturday, March 30th, 2024. I'm passing through New York City, and they're having a green market, farmer's market, craft fair kind of thing in Union Square Park. And I've run into Giselle. What do you have here, Giselle?
A tummy. I call it a tummy, really. I don't find any way. It has two parts. A tummy, EU mean wavy. In general, any word that starts with E and U, it means something which is wavy. And tummy, it's thermal, which is a temperature that we can feel. So a tummy, just everything that I do with a fluctuation of thermal, which is wavy, wave energy.
Your stand caught my eye because it's all very natural looking with the wooden shelves and the clear glass jars with the food, like natural food that's in them. What are some of the food things you have in the jars?
You just said your eyes capture things which are natural, you know, wood, completely natural, you know. The food, through the glass, you can see the food exactly. Because I work with nature, I work with senses. And if you notice, no food have labels. There's no label because this food has to speak themselves. And this is what they did to you. They call your eyes and then you saw them. And inside, actually, you can have... right here I have things made with garlic, with milk, with rice, beans, oil, flowers, you name it. The thing is, I actually stay away from names because names doesn't tell me anything anymore. When you see what you see here, this fruit, which we call clementine, actually it's an array of stuff. Out of that clementine, I can give you 1,000 product. Out of that one clementine, because at each second you have a different product.
And the round discs that are sitting on the plate that are about the size of a tortilla.
Yeah, it's like a tortilla. That is very interesting because I made it out of a plain flour, you know, flour that you use to make bread. It's because I made it just out of common sense. When we cook something, we really apply global warming on the food that we cook. But we need something that's gonna take the heat, that's gonna really stand the heat from the electricity. And this will do the job because it doesn't burn fast. It have a very high wave intensity, what we call the amplitude, so that much more higher than electricity. So it's gonna capture the heat. And then what's gonna go through the tortilla that you just gave it the name, I call it the flat. What's gonna go through it will be just the wave enough for what you will be cooking over it.
So you made this thing out of flour and water, cook at a certain temperature, and then you use it as like a cooking disc inside a pot?
Exactly, inside the pot. You put it inside the pot and over it you put your food. Whether it's an egg or whether it's beans or whether you just want to heat a sauce. Because it's really thick, it's sticky, so it's like plastic. Basically, it's a natural plastic. Now nature can imitate plastic. That's funny.
So you put it in the pot, you put your food on it, and you cook with it, and then you can reuse it, wash it, reuse it?
Yeah, when it's hot, you pour cold water in it. It just washes it out right away. And then next time you use it again, again and again.
Is this a thing that you learned from somewhere else, or did you invent this?
It's not a secret. But what happened is that very quick in 2018, I grew my tomato, and overnight they went through global warming because in the morning, overnight they died. In the morning they were full of water. So what happened is that they froze overnight, and then in the morning they liberate extra water that they could not absorb it. And honestly, I cry. The tomato was so beautiful and so many of them. I cry. And since then, I decided I wanted to know what happened to them. And I started to look the other way. That's how, and I went. I never looked back. Uh-huh. It led me step by step. Now it's 6 years. But during COVID, I was in Africa, in Cameroon, my country, and then I tried to test that, what I was seeing, by growing things like this. This is lemongrass from there. I grow it there myself. And I raised chicks. That's why I learned. Chicks taught me a lot about eggshell, uh-huh. and that's how I make this cream. Uh-huh. And so over there, I really confirm all of this, uh-huh. what I was saying, what I saw here. And I submitted some sample to Cornell University, and then they approve it. So. Cool.
Thanks for sharing.
Oh, my pleasure.
That was Giselle. I met her at Union Square Park in New York City on my way to Kentucky at the farmer's market. This is Angelique Kidjo, one of my favorites. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP Northampton, and streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. Out There airs Fridays from 4 until 5 p.m. I'm Ruthie. Next on Out There. So today's show is just going to be gatherings from the last couple weeks, my trip to Kentucky and back here in Northampton.
My next gathering, I was on the bus to Knoxville, and I thought I should share some tips and tricks for long-distance bus travel. I'm not sure about the sound quality on this. I may have to interrupt myself on this and just give it to you live over the mic if I can remember.
Well, I'm on the bus from New York City to Knoxville. One of the things I've discovered in my decades of riding the bus is that a baseball cap, that's really convenient for putting on top of the seatbelt protrusion between the two seats to keep your ribs from getting jabbed when you're trying to sleep across the seats. Something else, if you have stamps, like a little booklet of sticky mailing stamps, you can peel some of the sticky paper part that's not part of the stamp and use that to cover over the LED light that the little night lights that shine down on you from right above your seat. They're supposed to be like safety lights or something. On the Amtrak, you need something bigger, like a playing card or a business card. I think playing cards, the one design of train cars, the playing cards would fit right up into the light. And their ends would stay in place. Just they would tuck in. And also, if the bus driver says, this is on Greyhound once, if she says you can't take off your shoes, I really don't think that's legally binding. This trip to and from Knoxville, Tennessee, has gotten a lot easier with the Chinatown bus. Basically, it's like take the train to New York City, take a walk through Manhattan and visit the parks, go on down to Chinatown, get a $100 motel room for the night, and wake up at 7 a.m. in Knoxville, Tennessee. And the motel room's maybe a little loud and shaky, and no toilet paper in the bathroom, and you might wake up a time or two in the middle of the night at some gas station, but other than that, if you got two seats to yourself, lie down, stick your feet up in the air like a dead cockroach, and enjoy the ride. Bed would be a little more comfortable if I could get the armrest out of my head, like literally out of my head. This bus is making a funny noise going up some mountain in Pennsylvania. I don't know if we're gonna make it to Tennessee. Another great thing about the bus, your farts don't stink, because they have these good ventilation systems. So, just to be sure, you only let out like a tiny one, bigger and bigger just to make sure. And then you let out a really big one and you're like, holy smokes, actually, my farts have been stinking this whole time. Uh-oh, I wonder who's been able to smell it. I like that this bus has no lights above the seats that you could turn on, and no Wi-Fi, and as well, it's an overnight bus, so that means, what are you going to do? You're going to sleep. Good. Or at least try to.
Transportation literacy. That's something I wish was taught in schools, in homes, everywhere. There's so many ways to get around. Walk, bike, car, scooter, electric bike, hitchhike. I think a lot of kids don't know how to take the public buses. A kid with a bike on the bus, that can open up a whole new world. It's Easter morning. I got to Knoxville. It's still dark when the bus dropped me off about 6:30, half an hour early. That bus is almost always early, the Chinatown bus. But my next bus
local bus, Knoxville bus, isn't until 8:15. So I'm walking around a little bit. I cut through Bearden High School in the dark, big mega high school. And there's this corrugated plastic sign taped to the electrical box right outside the entrance, a big sign that said U.S. Air and Space Force Recruiting, and it had the recruiter's name on it, duct taped to that box. I ripped it off, stuck it in my backpack for evidence. Around the back side of the high school, after all the football fields, track fields, tennis courts, baseball fields, there's a little cobblestone patio park area with a couple benches, just maybe 25 feet square. And it's part of a little pocket park with 25 tombstones on it that have the names of 25 different high schoolers that have died young over the years they went to Bearden High School. I can't help but wonder how many of them died in car crashes. And I'll say I'm very grateful to be here, to have arrived in Knoxville, safe and sound. My friends Mark and Sally Smith from Middlesboro, Kentucky. Sally was my kindergarten teacher back around 1980, but they come to church here in Knoxville, and they're here for a Easter sunrise service this morning. Anyway, I'll catch them later on this morning with some Knoxville area transit buses, and they'll give me a ride back to Middlesboro, where my dad will pick me up, is the plan. Sorry, no real adventures planned. Oh, did I tell you I got my first two ticks of the season last week? I had been hanging out, wandering around what we call the woodlot, off the rail trail between the cement plant and Meadowbrook, looking for some black locust branches, logs, posts, me and Max. And anyway, the next day, I found a tick pretty well chewing on me in a place I couldn't really reach. So I asked our couch surfing guest if she could pull it off. She was like, I've never pulled off a tick before. I'm from the West Coast. I said, look, here's the tweezers. Just grab it as close to my skin as you can and just pull it off. She was a little nervous, but she did it. And then she had the tick in the tweezers. And she said, I'm going to run out to the bike path to leave it out there, because she's kind of Buddhist. And I said, no, give that tick to me. You are not responsible for the fate of this tick. And I snatched it from her and sent her away so she didn't have to see the massacre.
Wow. Don't look at this one. It hurts. Heck, it hurts.
There's 35.1 million people who are in the line of view of this today.
How do you remember all this information?
That's what I spent my weekend doing, was Googling this.
It's moving!
This is the best day of my life.
Thursday, April 11th, 2024. It's another trip back to Massachusetts via Knoxville. I'm walking through the northern suburbs. Suburbs? I don't really call it a suburb. I just call it sprawl. The northern sprawl of Knoxville. Hanging out under the I-75 bridge. Another rainy day. Pouring, waiting for this storm to pass through. As I have said in past encounters with Knoxville, that's not right downtown. It's not the most pedestrian-friendly place. I asked my dad to drop me off on the north end, though, because I know he doesn't like to drive in the city. And also, I wanted to go visit a place that I had seen before. Thomas the Troll, I call him. So last year, my dad dropped me off on the northern edge of Knoxville. He dropped me off at where he had a doctor's appointment, some medical center way north, Emory Drive or somewhere, so Emory Road. So I had biked and had come across this bridge over a stream or creek, and I looked down below and there was this sort of this like industrial wasteland kind of area. It had been carefully crafted with reclaimed, scavenged pieces of stone, broken sidewalk, old bricks from an abandoned orphanage up on the hill that was now covered with trees and vines. and there was art, lots of art with sort of a Middle Eastern and Native American kind of themes on the walls of the bridge. The bridge is only like a 5 foot tall, 6 foot tall. I guess I could walk under it. It's like a 6 foot tall bridge. And the ceiling had painting on it. And so when I stopped there, there was a man there, and I introduced myself. He said his name was Thomas. I think he had been a vet in, I'm gonna guess, Syria or somewhere in the Middle East. He was in his 40s, but he said he had been working in that area for the last 2 or 3 years. I think he was living there and everything. And he was super friendly. I mean, he was just, yeah, he showed me around and took me on a walk to a place where he was collecting supplies from an abandoned building, and told me a little bit of the history of the place and the future of the place with a car dealership plan. Well, that was in October, I think, when my dad dropped me off in that neighborhood, and I found that place. I was just biking over the bridge, and I looked down below and was like, whoa, I want to see what that is. Anyway, so this time, what, it's April, I thought, oh, I'll go back, see if I can find Thomas the Troll. And so I'm on foot now, but I walked a mile or two to the bridge and went down below. The artwork and stuff was still there, but I couldn't find Thomas. So I just admired the work. Anyway, am I walking in the sprawling Knoxville with no sidewalks, no hardly any dirt paths. I'm walking in the ditch all the time. I just reminded myself, and my bus doesn't leave till 7:45 tonight, and it's like 1:30 in the afternoon now. But I got all day to go 10 miles or whatever. I'll catch a bus pretty soon. But I thought, yeah, I'm on a peace walk. I am on a peace walk. Everyone walking's on a peace walk. I may not be having a sign, but just walking in car culture is a peace walk, if you want to see it that way. And the cars are coming by like a foot away, and there's cars in both directions, an narrow road, pickup trucks in both directions, landscaping trucks in both directions, with like no room between the white line, the crumbling edge of the asphalt, and the sloping ditch. But the good thing is, the fact that I'm walking in the grass in the ditch means that it's softer on my feet. So I gotta thank the traffic for that. I was swinging my umbrella for a little bit, trying to fend off. Trying to claim a little space, but ultimately in this kind of environment, we know if there's any kind of contact between a hunk of steel going 45 miles an hour and my arm or shoulder, it's very clear who's going to be suffering the most at the end of that encounter. Uh-oh, the water has started coming into the drainage ditch of this underpass, and it looks like I might be getting a little stranded. We're having to place some rocks strategically to get through the puddles to get out when it's time to get out. So when I travel and look at maps, one of the things I often notice, as well as I notice this around home, is all the things named after people. And there's a poem that I really like by a woman named Miriam. I don't know her last name. I have her book. She's a Cherokee woman from Oak Ridge, Tennessee. But the poem's called Cherokee Woman on the Moon. And I don't remember all of it, but it says something like the grandparents told us to leave no trace. Cherokee woman brushes away the footsteps on the moon, or something like that. But I wish that we were taught to try to not reveal where we've been, but in my white European culture, it's just the opposite. We're taught to make our mark, leave our mark, everywhere, anywhere. Honor the ancestors by naming things after them, remembering them, remembering their lessons. Name things after them. That's how we express our honor and respect. But don't forget the ancestors of the trees and the mountains, the birds, the wind, air, sky. There's something in the ditch here sticking out of the running water. At first I thought it reminded me of part of an armadillo. The part that was poking out of the water, but now I see that's an old sock, an old black sock. There's so many things on this walk I'm grateful for. I'm not getting bitten by mosquitoes. I'm not too hot. I'm not too cold. My body all feels healthy. I feel loved. I feel safe. I feel comfortable. My powers to numb myself to the destruction are feeling strong and robust today. And it looks like the heaviest part of this rainstorm has passed through, so I think I'll go look for the Knox County Library down on Merchant Drive and hopefully not get splashed too much by all the cars coming through with the spray. You're listening to Out There on Valley Fee Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie. I'm playing some clips from a trip to Kentucky. Well, Knoxville is actually in Tennessee, but for me to come and go to the part of Kentucky where I'm from, the way the Appalachian Mountains run and public transit runs, Knoxville, Tennessee is usually the easiest place to go to, nearest bus station. Stay tuned for more of something here on Out There. Democracy Now! Comes on at 5, but I got more rants and raves, and here's some Katie Malua. Next on Out There, I'm going to play a piece that I read in the Knox County Library. The last clip I played, I was walking through Knoxville, so I stopped in at the library and was reading lots of things that I grabbed off the shelves. And this is an article in Time magazine written by Nemante Nkimo on respecting the Amazon and what is owed to the planet. She says, Someone recently asked me why it was important to protect the Amazon rainforest from oil drilling. The question made me angry. Can you imagine being questioned about the importance of protecting your home from being destroyed in a fire? Or about protecting your home, your extended family's homes, and all your people's homes from demolition? Can you imagine being asked, why is it important to protect your country from nuclear devastation? Those questions seem absurd only when you take the existence of your home and your people for granted. Western civilization has always taken the destruction of my home and my people for granted. And now, this well-meaning question assumes that I must offer a defense of my existence. It also presents a false innocence about the asker's complicity in the continued destruction of my home. As a Warani leader tasked with communicating beyond our territorial borders to safeguard our land, I often face questions like this. Answering is part of the resistance, and it's not easy. Yet, with Ecuador's government now pushing to ignore our hard-won ban on oil drilling on one of our most biodiverse forests, it remains an urgent question to answer. What I long for, and what the Amazon and Mother Earth demand, can be summed up in what is missing in the questions and policies so often pointed at me and my people. Respect. Why is it important to protect the Amazon rainforest from oil drilling? We Warani like to walk. When we need to think, we head off walking in the forest. When we want to express our emotions, we walk and sing. Our songs, too, are fruits of the forest. Wherever we walk, we are in communication with everything around us. We know the plants and the birds, and the way city dwellers know the names of streets and the logos of stores. But streets do not breathe, and stores do not take flight. The forest is our grocer, our pharmacy, our hardware store, our theater, our gym, our park. We cultivate our small orchards and walk the forest to hunt and to gather food, medicine, tools, and beauty and art supplies. Politicians and oil executives think that we're idiots, that we plod among the trees picking things up that look yummy. They say that we don't even know the value of the resources beneath the ground. But that's how they show their own ignorance. The oil deep in the earth is the blood of our ancestors. And we know better than to dig up a grave. Why pillage a grave when life is all around us? We don't need oil. The forest is life itself. We know which plants can heal and which songs to sing to ask permission for cutting them and using their cures. We know that the Potomo palm fruits in January and February, and that its oil is excellent for maintaining long, shiny hair and healthy skin. We know that the monkeys and the tapirs time their reproductive cycles to coincide with fruit abundance. We know that the beech palm makes the best spears. We know not to use more than we need. The first Europeans to enter the Amazon wanted only gold and power. They brought disease and murder. It's no wonder that all their tales of adventure describe the forest as a site of danger. I have had dreams of great dangers to come. Unrestrained industrialization has poisoned the atmosphere. Burning down the Amazon will accelerate climate change beyond a point of no return. Uncontrolled warming will imperil life on Earth. Mother Earth will not be saved. She does not need you or anyone to save her. She demands respect, and she will punish humanity for failing to give it. And yet, time and again, people in positions of governmental and industrial power refuse to do so. They insist on destruction. They've had so many opportunities to respect us, and they've squandered them all. Just in recent years, Ecuador's political class could have upheld indigenous people's rights to free, prior, and informed consent, the right to decide what happens in their territories, as enshrined in international law by the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. But they didn't. They made us fight. In 2019, my people achieved a historic legal victory protecting a 500,000 acres of Wurundjeri territory and setting a legal precedent to protect millions more. The government could have respected that court victory and complied with the ruling, but instead, it has failed to respect it and continues to have its eye on drilling oil from our lands. They could have respected our demands to stop all oil drilling and pumping in Yasuni National Park, one of the most biodiverse places in the world, but they didn't. Again, they made us fight, this time joined by allies across the country. Just last year, the people of Ecuador again made history by voting in a national referendum to stop and permanently ban all oil exploitation in Yasuni. We won. We should be celebrating and coordinating with people in other regions and other countries to help devise strategies to protect their forests. Instead, we are forced to keep fighting. Newly elected Ecuadorian President Daniel Noboa has called for an illegitimate moratorium, quote, moratorium, on complying with the results of the referendum. Why can't they respect us? Why can't they even respect their own laws? How many times do we have to use the tools of the civilization that wants to destroy us, its courts and elections, to stop their destruction? Where is the rule of law when the rulers change the laws whenever they feel inconvenienced? Is it really so much to ask for respect? I often feel heartbroken when I travel abroad to speak about our struggle. I see how many possessions and luxuries people have and how they only want more. Their greed fuels the burning of the Amazon. Some people on these trips tell me I'm a hero. No, I'm not. I'm just trying to do something. This is resistance. Why is it important to protect the Amazon from oil exploitation? My life, the lives of my family and people, our homes, our culture, our language, the lives of myriad plant and animal species, many of which are endemic to the Amazon, the life of the forest itself, and the lives of millions of people, perhaps even yours, all depend on it. Is that good enough? That is a piece by Namante Nenkimo, co-founder of Sebo Alliance and Amazon Frontlines. She is the Warani leader who has won the Goldman Environmental Prize. And co-author of the upcoming book, We Will Be Jaguars, with Mitch Anderson. Reading about a prize that she had won doesn't really sound like in character with who I believe her to be. Respect. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm Ruthie. And let's hear from the Expandable Brass Band. I love brass band music, especially when I come across the expandable brass band playing somewhere in town. Here is also music. Last Friday, I caught an art show by Mars and music by Mal Devisa at the Anchor House of Artists. And I ran into my friend Anna Arthur.
It's Friday, April 12th, 2024. I'm at a show at Anchor House. How long has Anchor House been here?
Anchor House has been here since the late 90s, like probably close to 25 years, 24, 25. Michael Tillier founded it. It's just grown and grown, and now he runs it with his wife, Susan Foley, and they are just rocking it here all the time, doing so many amazing shows, just packed with like art you won't see anywhere else in Northampton, nothing like this, and also an amazing dynamic performance space that just has, you know, poetry and music and theater. I mean, it's really just unmatched in Northampton and in Western Mass. It's like I feel like every person that I've seen walk into this space is just kind of awed. Like, they're like, I didn't even know this was here. It's so magical.
A-W-E-D.
Yeah, odd. Yeah. So it's really quite a special place, and I am just so impressed with Michael and Susan and the amount of energy that they put into, like, maintaining this space. It's truly, like, a labor of love. Yeah. So.
And you have a work of art here, Anna?
Yeah, I've been showing here for probably, I was just talking to Susan about this, like, since 2017. I've had a number of, like, big solo shows here, and, you know, great crowd always comes out for the opening, and it's just, it's, like, the best place to have a show, because you're surrounded by just great people and amazing art and just such good energy, and I'm just honored to, you know, be a part of the space.
Wow, like if a person's interested in having a show here, like where would they start?
I mean, they could go to the anchorhouseartists.org and check out.
Get in touch with Michael Tillier.
Oh, yeah, there's a contact.
Michael Tillier, how do you spell his last name?
It's
T-I-L-L-Y-E-R.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
It's Tuesday, April 16th. 2024. I'm doing my pedal people route. Sorry, listeners. I meant to say at the end of that clip with Anna that Anchor House of Artists is 500 and something on Pleasant Street, across the street from the bowling alley near the roundabout and the dike. Yeah. All right. Going up the rail trail, I was just loading up in a neighborhood, emptying paper recycling into my bin, and a copy of the New York Times floated through. The picture on the cover of the business section was just a picture of a very urban area with a green mountain ridge in the background and this sort of hazy sky. And I forget what the subtitle was on the picture. It was a city in Tokyo, a place in Tokyo. It had been a farming town, and now some electronics company had built a big factory there that you could see in the background of the picture. And it just made me think of my trip back from Kentucky along the interstate, along I-81, I-40 in Knoxville, along the I-75 and Corbin, London, I-81 coming up Virginia through the Shenandoah Valley and into like Pennsylvania, like Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and through to New Jersey and into New Jersey and New York City. So many miles of cars and trucks and huge buildings going for miles of to support the shopping industry and capitalism and all these things. And I look at that picture in the New York Times, and I don't know how other people see that picture. Does anybody see that picture as progress? I'm not the only one shouting and screaming,
I saw I read a really great piece in Time magazine by Namante Nenkimo, who's from lives in the Amazon area of what's also called Ecuador. And it really made me, my heart breaks to see, my mind goes haywire to see this destruction of nature called progress. And where will it end? Well, it'll end when the human beings are dead, I suppose. But it makes me want to go on strike. One of my coworkers did a strike for Palestine in December. And a couple of my coworkers. And I thought that was great, but I kind of felt like I want to do a big strike. I just want to just quit. We should just all quit collecting trash. Just quit making trash. Quit the consumerism, the capitalism. I'm going to just go on a very big permanent strike one day. Maybe I'll call it retirement. I just had this moment of feeling really tired of shuffling the waste of the capitalist system and all these manufactured desires and bad choices provided, bad choices taken. And I thought, I'm gonna go on strike from hauling trash, from buying trash, producing trash. And I thought, okay, so am I gonna go to Kentucky and just stay there for a while, living on the mountain and growing my own food and all that? But how am I gonna get there? Bicycle? What if I need new tires? Would I ride a normal bike or electric assist bike? Would I use electricity? Pretty hard to disentangle ourselves to live the lives we believe. But that's not an excuse to not do it. Then there was another title in the newspaper that said something like, Democrats vexed by Palestine protests, or something like that. And I'm like, vexed by the protests? What about by the violence? And I was watching some YouTube videos this morning, the president of El Salvador talking about how he's cracked down on gangs in El Salvador and made it a much safer place for people who aren't in gangs. And then seeing a video from another perspective of people who've lost loved ones and their freedom to being arrested, beaten, and just because they're swept up in the sweeps and police is having quotas to meet and arresting whoever they come across, and freedom versus safety conundrum. And for who? Freedom for who and safety for who? And then there was somebody with a leaf blower. And then there was somebody with a leaf blower about a block away from where I was picking up trash, and that pitch, the drone, the screaming of that machine started to aggravate me in a bad way and made me feel like start to yell a little bit at the thing. And I thought about, what would the principles of nonviolence say in a situation like this? If the principles of nonviolence can apply to being beaten and jailed and slandered and tortured and having your loved ones taken from you, etc., maybe they can also apply to having to be subjected to the noises of leaf blowers. I do realize it is not a personal thing. No, there's no personal intention to harm or aggravate me, which you think it'd be even easier to blow off then. It has nothing to do with me. It's just the system. Somebody's just doing their job.
You're listening to Out There Today. I'm listening to Out There Today, too. Listen to Ruthie's rants and raves on and on. Well, stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. Thanks for listening today. There will not be Bike Lab tomorrow. I'm going to every other Saturday for Bike Lab for the next few months. Tomorrow I'll be at the Amherst Sustainability Fair with the Orbitron, helping run the Orbitron, which is kind of like a human gyroscope that you step into and you use your body balance and strength to flip yourself in all directions. This is Mongo Santa Maria. I'm Ruthie, and I guess I'll be back for out there next Friday here on Valley Free Radio.
And you're listening to Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP 103.3 FM at Northampton, Massachusetts.